Session number 5382, Reel 1.
Mrs. Taylor, Reel 1. You were only 4 years old or so when the war was declared.
Yes.
Only just 4 years old. So
yes.
I presume you don't remember anything about that.
No, I can't remember war starting, although I seem to remember perhaps my parents being distressed and I couldn't understand why. I can certainly remember asking my father why there was no more ice cream. Suddenly no more of the walls, men trundling around with their little bicycle things and ice cream. So, but apart from that, I don't really remember much.
Where were you living at the time?
We were living in a place called Hook, which is just outside Surbiton, and I think it must be about 8 to 10 miles from the centre of London. And I suppose I really remember better from the time when the flying bombs came. But there were unpleasant incidents because of my father being a conscientious objector. And this had repercussions on the whole family. We were called names, and the teachers at school were a little frosty. The neighbours in our road, a lot of them wouldn't speak to my mother. And as a very small child, being very aware of atmosphere, I think I noticed a lot of things.
Can you remember any particular incidents?
Well, words like Jerry lovers being shouted by other children. I can remember my mother telling me that when a bomb fell close by and we lost all the tiles off our roof, she went to see the landlord, our houses were rented, about getting our roof fixed because everyone else in the street had had theirs fixed and we hadn't. He said, "Oh, I'm not going to repair your house. Your husband's a conscientious objector. He won't fight." And I'm afraid it always seemed to be my mother who suffered. And I can remember having no windows. The windows had all blown in, and of course the roof was leaking, and it always seemed to be very cold for some reason. Well, of course coal was rationed anyway, but I do remember the cold, and I can remember going out to standpipes in the street because obviously when bombs had fallen close by, I suppose the water supply had been affected.
What sort of house were you living in at the time?
It was a kind of a terrace house. It was one of four in a row, and this was the end one. And it was a very small house, three bedrooms, and with a fair plot of garden, I suppose. And, of course, my father grew vegetables. I think everyone grew vegetables then, dig for victory and all that. And it was a little cul-de-sac. I suppose there must have been about 60 or 70 houses there. And then beyond the end of the cul-de-sac were some bungalows, and I know one of the bungalows got a direct hit, and there were four people killed. And then behind our road there were fields, cultivated farmers' land, presumably. Then later on, I think some of that was sold off because eventually there were German prisoners of war working there. And I can remember going to school and saying goodbye to my mother and not knowing if I was going to see her when I came home, whether she'd still be there. I can remember going to school and the sirens went while I was on my way, and we always had to go straight to the shelters, we were told, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to get to school because I somehow, although I didn't much care for school, I felt I'd be safer at school than I would be in a shelter. And as far as being at school was concerned, I don't think we did any lessons because we spent most of the time in the shelters singing 10 green bottles and one man went to mow. I remember the teacher say, as you could hear the guns getting louder and perhaps bombs falling, he would urge us to sing louder. And you'd be singing loudly and listening at the same time for the wondering if the bomb was coming for you. And I can remember the drip, drip, drip of the water running down the walls in the shelters. All very cold and wet and frightening.
Did you have a shelter at home?
We had one of those table-type shelters. I can't remember what they were called. I believe at the beginning of the war, my father had dug in the garden the area necessary for an outside shelter because at one time that filled with water because we had clay soil, and I think I fell in it because I know I nearly drowned when I was about four. And then we had one of the indoor ones. And when the bombing got very bad, we did all sleep in that. There were six of us sleeping. It was awful, all squashed in like sardines. And I think after a while, we must have got so used to the bombs that we didn't use it. And we slept back upstairs in our beds.
Six of you? How is that?
Well, I had two brothers and a sister. And my parents. And my eldest brother was, he was born in 1928, so he was 7 years older than I was. And then my next brother was 3 years older than I. And then there was myself, and my sister was, she was 14 months younger. And I suppose I was her protector. In a way, she always seemed to look up to me. But I think the most frightening thing for me was looking up at the sky when the doodlebugs went over. And you knew that as long as the flames were coming out at the back and the engine was going, you were okay. And you just looked, waiting for the engine to stop, because then you knew it was coming down. And I can remember coming back from shopping with my mother and my sister one day, and we were almost at home, and one went over, and we waited and waited, and then suddenly the engine cut. And I can remember we dived to the ground, because we probably knew it wasn't going to fall near us, but it was instinct, in a way.
What was your father doing during the war as a conscientious objector?
Well, he had to go and work on the land. He, before the war, he'd had a very good job in the city, in a bank, earning a very reasonable salary. And then along had come the war, and he had decided he wasn't going to fight. He didn't believe in war. I believe he had to go before tribunal. And I can always remember my mother saying the thing which hurt her most was my father was asked that if the Germans invaded and actually came into England and his family were threatened, would he fight to protect us? And he said no, he wouldn't. And I don't think my mother could ever forgive him for that. And I think he was offered the choice of going to prison or working on the land. And I believe the land organisation was called SWAC, or S-W-A-E-C, or something like that. And so he was sent to various farms to work, and he went off on his bicycle at 6 a.m, and he would go to Leith Hill or to Epsom, places like that, which was quite a long way from where we lived. And then he'd come home about 6:30 in the evening, obviously worn out. And earning, I believe, to begin with, only about 30 shillings a week. I know later on it went up to something like £3. And then perhaps at the end of the war it was a little more. And our rent was 27 shillings a week. So I really don't know how my mother managed. I've got an idea that she had to sell various possessions in order to pay the rent and buy us food. And I can remember she sent me down to the butcher's one day with a pound note and a little list of to get whatever he had, because you had to take what the butcher had. It was either sausages, if he had sausages that day, or a tin of corned beef. And I lost the money. And I had to go back and tell her I'd lost this pound note. And she was so distressed. I've never forgotten that all my life, that pound note, which must have been worth about £20 now.
Did your father come from a family of conscientious objectors?
No, he had nothing like that in the family at all. I gather he had not exactly joined the Quakers, but he had become friendly with people who were Quakers. And obviously there must have been a group. I seem to remember he went to Kingston for these meetings. So there must have been a group of people who were nonconformists, and he must have joined them. But I know he had principles, and I admire him for that, and he obviously had courage. But I think when he had a family of young children, I think he should have put them first. And of course, if he'd joined the army and gone away to fight, even if he'd been killed, my mother would have had a pension to live on. And in the end, because of his political beliefs and because of being a conscientious objector, it destroyed their marriage.
Do you know if he was able to get his old job back again after the war?
No, I don't think he even wanted it, because he spent the rest of his working life working in nursery gardens and doing various kinds of gardening or farm work. I know he worked at Epsom College for a while, and then he worked for a convent as gardener. And he did that for the rest of his life. And it obviously suited him, because he is very robust. I know he took for his lunch bread and cheese every day, wholemeal bread and cheese, because he had an extra cheese ration. I can remember doing the shopping for my mother, and where everyone else was getting a tiny square of cheese, we had an enormous wedge. It must have weighed a pound. And he's since the war, he's lived on bread and cheese for his lunch, and he's as fit as a fiddle.
Were there any other members of the peace movement locally who could give moral support, if not actual financial aid, to your family?
Well, I only know really what my mother has told me, and she, of course, didn't want anything to do with them. So they were not made welcome in our house. But obviously my father went to regular meetings, and he also delivered circulars. He delivered copies of the Peace News, because he belonged to the PPU. And I can remember pushing these through letterboxes for him, not really knowing what they were about, but knowing they were connected with this awful business which had caused us so much suffering and humiliation, and I never really enjoyed doing that. But I don't remember people coming to the house. He had friends, clergymen, and obviously people sympathetic to their cause, but I don't remember them coming to the house, and I don't remember any financial support, except perhaps once being taken by my father to obviously some friends of his and being given a pair of shoes that had belonged to one of their children. So I think we were dressed by hand-me-downs and things like that.
What was your older brother's opinion about conscientious objection, who might have been a bit able to understand things better than you at that time?
Well, obviously he didn't approve, because as soon as he was 17, he went and joined the Royal Air Force, and he joined the Air Training Corps before that. It must have been a dreadful stigma, and I suppose because of our mother's reaction and everyone's reaction around us, this had made us determined that we weren't going to do the same thing.
Can you remember the Blitz on London in 1940? Of course, you were only five.
I can remember the searchlights every night. We could see those in the distance. And, of course, the bombers going over. And this awful throb, throb, throb of engines. But somehow I seem to remember knowing that the bombs weren't for us, that they were going to London, and we weren't quite as afraid. And of the few bombs which did fall near us, I suppose, were ones which the German pilots just let loose if they hadn't dropped them all on London. But I was much more frightened by the flying bombs.
At the beginning of the war, in September 39, a number of school children were evacuated from London and other places that were likely targets. Have you any idea why you and your brothers weren't?
No, none at all. My mother was very fond of us, and I think she must have felt that if she could keep us all together, we'd be safe. And she obviously needed our support because of my father, and she perhaps felt she needed us around her. Certainly there was no move at school to evacuate any of the pupils there, so we were obviously considered to be in a reasonably safe area, being part of the home counties.
Well, and of course in the early years of the war, nothing much happened there.
No.
When did you first hear about your own actual evacuation?
Well, I can remember my father saying that the flying bombs were getting very bad, and I think it must have been at the time when the V2s started to come over. It was in the spring of 1944, as far as I can remember. And I can remember going with him to some kind of offices in a big Victorian house in Surbiton. And I gather that this was a peace organisation office, not sure which one, probably the PPU. And I can remember things going on that I was a little unhappy about. And then, of course,
What must you mean?
Have gone back home. Well, just conversations which disturbed me, I suppose, must have been talk about sending us away, going away because of the danger. And I probably asked questions, and in those days, of course, you weren't given answers because children should be seen and not heard. And then when we got home, obviously, my mother came into the conversation. Then it was made clear that we were going to be sent away and that we were going to stay with families who were sympathetic to the peace movement, and that we would go to Leeds. I, of course, knowing little about the state of bombing in England, had no idea that even Leeds had had bombs at some time or other. And to me, we were just going away, and I didn't know where it was, because I'd never, ever been anywhere further than, I think, Bognor Regis, and occasionally to Gloucester, because we had an aunt there. And I didn't really know that any other places existed apart from those, and London.
How did your mother feel about the plans for you to go?
Well, I think things had got to the stage where she was probably anxious for us to go. I suppose the war was dragging on. Nobody knew when it was going to end. Things seemed to be going from bad to worse. Suddenly there was this greater danger because of these wretched V2s. And at the time, she probably thought it was the best thing. And I remember nothing of the journey going, only of the journey coming back.
What did she think of your going to stay with families sympathetic to your father?
I suppose she didn't approve. Perhaps she had to swallow her pride because we were going to a safe place. And I suppose she perhaps gave in on that. She perhaps had got to the stage where she couldn't really fight much more for us.
Did you know of other children whose fathers weren't conscientious objectors being evacuated elsewhere around the same time?
No, none at all. There had really, I think, been no evacuation. I had no friends at school. No one in the immediate neighbourhood had been sent away at all.
I asked that because I wondered if, because of the feelings about your father, if it would have, in fact, been difficult for your parents to send you on an ordinary evacuation.
Yes, probably. I don't know what the official reaction was. We were ostracised to a certain extent. It was quite obvious some of the teachers at school knew our background and were therefore a little awkward with us. And afterwards, my mother has always claimed that I never won a scholarship in the 11-plus exam because of what my father had been. Although, obviously, one would doubt that, but I should think it could be possible.
Well, I think that the war did disrupt a lot of children's education.
Yes.
Though that might be part of it.
Well, it certainly disrupted mine, because I don't really remember learning anything in the war years at all, and I've been backward ever since. Done all my learning from books, reading since then.
Apart from the problems of going to school in wartime, I mean the physical problems like bombs, were you from a bookish sort of family?
Yes. My father was an educated man. He had gone to Kingston Grammar School and had been very clever at maths, which is why he got his job in the bank, I suppose. My mother was educated. She'd been to a girls' grammar school. Her father had been a schoolmaster. We were always encouraged to read. And we were also considered a little different to the other children, probably because we read a lot. We had no wireless. I was always told we had no wireless because my father didn't approve. But I'm not so sure that about that. It's probably because we couldn't afford one. But I can remember listening to other people's wirelesses and being fascinated, but not really ever hearing the news. And my father discouraged us from reading newspapers as well. I don't know quite why. I think he considered the headlines were too horrific. And that we were too young, possibly.
I can see that with their academic background, your parents must have been disappointed that you didn't pass the 11 plus.
Yes, well, my mother was certainly. She had hoped that I would go on and do great things, and I'd always had ambitions to be a teacher. I would love to have taught history. I love history, especially British history. I think it's fascinating. And she was very, very disappointed. And I did, in fact, sit three times for the 11 plus because my school record was such that everyone felt that I should have got a place at a grammar school. And my head teacher couldn't understand why I hadn't. I was always in the top three or four in the class and considered one of the brighter ones. Now, whether this was because I suffered examination nerves and my mind went a complete blank and therefore I mucked it all up, I don't know. But I got to the stage where they sent me for an oral examination, and I can remember going to County Hall in Kingston before a panel of three elderly gentlemen. I thought they looked like Rip Van Winkle to me. Obviously they weren't. And I was absolutely terrified, and I was interviewed by these three gentlemen. And I can remember one of them set me a simple mental arithmetic sum, which I'd have done standing on my head normally, and I was so terrified. My mind went an absolute blank, and I just couldn't think what the answer was. I couldn't think how to do this sum or anything. So they must have thought, well, this is a right idiot we've got sitting here. What on earth is she doing after an 11-plus scholarship? And I never did get a place, but my mother always maintains it was because of my father's political views.
What were his political views, apart from conscientious objection?
Well, he was, at that time, he supported the Labour movement. He was nonconformist. And actually, I think some of it's rubbed off because I'm a bit of a nonconformist, have been ever since. And it seems to be rubbing off on my daughter as well, so it must be in the genes. You could call it intelligence, perhaps.
You said that your parents didn't talk things over with you much. I mean,
no.
Evacuation plans or war news or whatever. And, of course, that was common in those times. What were they like as disciplinarians?
Oh, well, my father I always thought of as being Victorian. He wasn't quite a Victorian. He was born in 1902.